Yes, you're back. Well, we posted the last conversation. Did you find that went well for you to share it, and you read comments and interacted with folks?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did interact a little bit with some people, and actually I've been reading Julian's blog, Coffee with Kierkegaard. Mm-hmm, can highly recommend it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was nice. It was nice to be able to share. And so I'm back sharing again. I mean, I am sharing.
Sharing.
Yeah.
Well, how did the lambing go? Did that go well?
Oh, it went well. Yeah, everything's done with the lambing. And I was talking to my sister on the phone just a few minutes ago, and I looked out my window, and I have one goat. I have goats as well, and I have one goat that's been a kid.
Oh.
I said to her, what's with having a conversation with Paul Vanderclay and babies being born?
Well, I've had five, so I... Fertility must surround me. And there's actually a dream that a Haitian woman had about me once that she came.
Yeah, I really tell that story, actually.
Yeah. So maybe I'm just fruitful in that way.
Yeah. Well, everything comes in its good time, and she'll be all right. She's an old hat, so I don't have to worry about her.
Okay. So what's on your list for today?
Well, you know, I re-listened, I watched the video again when you sent it to me, and I thought that I said a lot of things because I had a lot of things to say, you know, like I just had all this stuff all bound up, and somehow there wasn't, I mean, it was fine. I was happy with the conversation, but there wasn't a lot of context because I have a story, right? Mm-hmm. My life is, you know, a story in which those ideas and thoughts and concerns developed. And so I don't know, I just thought it might be fun to put a little bit of context to some of the ideas that I find interesting. Mm-hmm. And there's a verse here that actually my sister referred me to, and I thought it was really appropriate, because it says, it's in Revelation 12:11. They have conquered him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. Mm-hmm. And they did not love their lives so as to shy away from death. But the part that I thought was good was the by the word of their testimony, you know. And in light of the Jordan Peterson thing, the story is so important, you know, like people really appreciate the narrative, and it helps to cement the truth, but it also is a place where you find truth, you know, and you know, Jesus spoke in parables, and the truths were somehow the roots of those truths seem deepened in a story, you know.
Well, so in one of my videos, I mentioned Leslie Newbegin and his observation. So Leslie Newbegin was a Brit who went to India as a young man to be a missionary, spent his entire career in India, came back to Britain, and I think he had left in the 30s and come back in the 80s. And, you know, the place he returned to was nothing like the place he left religiously. And so I quoted something from one of his books. I don't know if I have my Newbegin section here, but basically a local congregation, the local church, is the hermeneutic of the gospel. And what that means is very much what's in that Revelation passage about the, you know, it's the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony, because the blood of the Lamb is just kind of out there. Theoretical, it's a story, but the word of the testimony and the testimony of the people, of the local people, is what make it real, and suddenly everything connects, and there's real power. People change, and the gospel, then the word becomes flesh in the midst, in time and space, in a community with an address, with a zip code, with real people and real names and real stories and all of that. And so that's, you know, that's very true and very right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the first part of the verse says they have conquered him, and they're referring to Satan. The verse is referring to Satan, sure. You know, so well, it's pretty powerful. The word of the testimony, right. And the blood of the Lamb, of course, but.
Well, I don't have Revelation open in front of me, but chapter 12, isn't that the dragon and the woman?
Yeah.
And yeah. She gives, you know, she's about to give birth and the dragon's going to eat the child. And no, I just started preaching. I'm going to be spending a number of weeks in Revelation at our 11 o'clock service. And during seasons, I tend to follow at least somewhat the lectionary texts. And so I saw that the New Testament readings were in Revelation. So I thought I'd preach on those, because the book of Revelation is one of my favorite books in the Bible. It's an astounding book, but it's so hard and complicated. So it's so much fun.
Yeah. And it's funny, because last time I spoke, I was talking about Genesis, and now I'm starting out with Revelation. And that's really how I'm like that. You know, I like the beginning of the book and the end of the book, and the whole stuff in the middle. It's like, it's jam-packed in there, but it's, you know, the story really is Genesis and Revelation, you know, that's for me anyway, it is. Yeah. But, I thought I'd share a little bit about my journey, how God, you know, worked his way into my life.
Okay.
I did mention before that I wasn't raised in a Christian home. My mother's mother was a Christian, and my mother was a Christian. My father was not. And we attempted, they did attempt some church going moments, you know, and so I was exposed to a little bit of United Church Sunday school here and Baptist church, something or other there, but it wasn't very consistent. So anyway, I was about 14 years old. My father had become a believer, and they started attending church pretty regularly. But I was well on my way to having my own identity and my own interests, and church wasn't one of them for me at the time. And I was actually quite a rebellious person. So I had some bad habits. I was into drugs and, you know, stuff like that at a young age. And my mother asked me one day if I wanted to go shopping with her for some clothes. And I thought, well, that would be great. You know, let's do that. And so we jumped in the car and she drove me to the local church. And there were all these buses parked out there. And she opened the trunk and pulled out my suitcase and said, "You're going to Bible camp for the summer." And so I was very, very upset, of course, but this was their attempt at, you know, salvaging what they could.
Yeah.
And, so I remember sitting in the bus and I was looking out the bus window and thinking, these people are going to be so sorry they ever met. They're going to send me home, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't remember a whole lot about the whole Bible camp stay, except for one very important moment in my life. And I guess they had a regular campfire every evening, and people would sit and talk and sing songs and, you know, stuff like that. So I was sitting at this campfire and I was on my own. I didn't want to be friends with anybody. I really didn't want to be there. And I had my Bible. I had a Bible that my mother gave me, and it was sitting on my lap, and I had it because we had to bring it with us. And it was dark, and I looked down at the Bible and the fire was flickering on the lettering, the gold lettering that said Holy Bible, right? And I don't know why I remember that, but somehow it jarred me. And I just thought, oh, this is so stupid. I'm getting out of here. I don't want to sit here any longer. And I got up from the campfire and I walked along the beach. It was on a lake. And And suddenly I was thrown to the ground, literally. So I'm at this, you know, very conservative Bible camp, Brethren Bible camp. And I get thrown to the ground and then face first in the sand and basically eating sand. And I could feel this heavy weight on my back, and all I could, you know, I couldn't audibly hear anything, but I had this very strong sensation that God was saying to me, I love you. I love you. Right. And I was wriggling and trying to get up, and I couldn't get up. And this weight was just pushing me down, and I was trying to crawl in the sand, and I was being pushed down. And then finally I struggled up to my knees, and at that point this weight lifted. But the whole time, the love of God was incredibly powerful. Like, I could feel it. I knew that that's what he was saying to me, and I was weeping. I got up and I walked down the beach, and I met a woman who was a counselor there, and she asked me if I was okay, and I didn't talk to her. I just kept walking and crying. And that was that. That was it. I didn't convert, you know. I didn't suddenly jump up and say I'm saved or anything. I didn't even tell anyone, actually. I think I told my husband about this maybe a month ago for the first time.
Wow.
Because I'm not a sensationalist, you know, like I'm not, those kinds of things I think are not things that can be replicated or should be replicated. And
we're going to send you to this camp. We're going to throw you on the ground. We're going to make you crawl in the sand. That'll do it. And you're going to get up and be a Christian. Yeah, I haven't seen that technique work with a lot of people, so
no.
not replicatable.
That's right. But you know, when Jordan Peterson referenced Israel meaning wrestling with God, yeah, that whole experience came back to my mind as this moment in time where I really didn't want to be a recipient of God's love. I didn't want it. I didn't want to be there. I didn't want to know God. I had my own agenda, you know, and I wasn't going to play ball with my parents or anybody else for that matter. So,
well, you know,
yeah, it was a real blessing.
I'm so glad you shared this story because, and I've made this point in a number of my videos, people share the stories you told me, while it's unique to you, is not categorically different from other stories other people have told me about similar events in their lives, especially events surrounding what would become part of the process of conversion. And as a pastor, people are willing to share these kinds of stories with me, but by virtue of our secular society, there's a degree of embarrassment about it, because it's weird. These things are not supposed to happen. And so nobody talks about them. Only certain kinds of people talk about them. But the kinds of people who have told me stories like what you just told me are, these are people with positions. They're trusted in society. They have credibility. They're most of them are not Pentecostal in any way. They haven't had a lot of experiences like this, but something happened in a moment that turned their life around, and it's inexplicable, although at the same time, it's, well, you tripped, or, I mean, someone, if they wanted to really hard to just kind of dismiss the story, they could make up a story to dismiss it, but nothing you've told me here surprises me at all, because I've heard many other people tell me similar things. Each story unique, but, you know, similar to what you just told me.
Yeah. And it's this, you know, wrestling idea too, right? Like I really latched on to that. I mean, I knew that Israel meant that, you know, but I had forgotten, and then you know, with the listening to Jordan Peterson and thinking about my life, because my life has been very complicated. It's been difficult. I've struggled with depression. I've struggled with anxiety. You know, I've almost lost my marriage. You know, there's been a lot of difficulties. But when I said in the last conversation that being in a relationship with God is the adventure of a lifetime, it is. It is the Narnia Chronicles. You know, it isn't all, you know, sunshine and rainbows, right? but there is this deep sense of knowing when you come into that relationship with God, there's a deep sense of knowing that he's got you, you know, I've got you, and we're going to get through this, you know. So I was struggling with the whole, like, once I became a Christian, I didn't tell anybody either. So I'm a Christian. I remember I told you the story of reading the Bible as a textbook. And I came into this relationship with God and through, you know, just falling in love with Jesus. But I didn't want to tell anybody. And it wasn't necessarily because I didn't want to be accountable to anyone. It was because I wanted it to be real. I didn't want it to get, you know, diluted with other people's ideas of what it should be, or theology or doctrinal differences. Or I just wanted to keep it the way it was. It was really intimate and it was real, and I just, you know, wanted it to be that way. And I was struggling with some things, some accountability things, you know, about how I should live my life, and praying about those things. And I had a dream. So this was another pivotal moment, you know, for me. And I dreamt that I was walking down this main street of a town, but I wasn't alone. I was in a crowd, and everybody was shoulder to shoulder, just jam-packed on this street. And they were all walking in the same direction, right? Just like jammed. And inside of the little alcoves of the stores along the street were these big, burly bouncer type guys. They were just watching the crowd, you know, scanning the crowd. So I'm in this crowd and I'm just, you know, shuffling along with everyone. And I hear this, psst, Sherry, you know, and I look over. And I'm scared to look over even, because everyone's facing the same direction. They're all walking in the same direction. And I look over and I see these angels, these two angels standing in this alcove of the store. And they go, come here. And I'm like, I'm going to get over there. And you know, I squeeze my way through. I join them in the alcove and we're kind of hidden from view. And they said, look, you've got to walk the other way. And I said, what? I can't. If I walk the other way, they're going to see me right away. Like, I'll be the only person, right? And how am I going to get through that crowd? Like, that's going to be brutal. And they said, yeah, we know it's going to be hard, and we'll do what we can to help you out. So there weren't any like fabulous promises or anything, right? And I said, okay. And I went out into the crowd and I started pushing. And these guys and these bouncers, you know, they all went, you know, and noticed me. And then I woke up, and that was my dream. So I felt like, okay, this is what I have to do. I have to do the thing that's different, whatever it is, you know. And I have a feeling you understand that, because just by nature of your channel, you know. It's like I'm gonna have a YouTube channel.
I'm gonna have the YouTube channel. I'm gonna have the Freddie and Paul show. I'm gonna have 2 hours of rambling about Jordan Peterson. I'm gonna have total strangers I don't know put them on my channel and tell their stories, and who knows what we'll talk about. Yep, there it is.
And that's when, you know, pardon the cliche, but that's when you let go and let God.
Yeah.
you know? And that's what I mean about the adventure of a lifetime. And the dream depicts it so well, because it's like, it's not going to be easy. You're going to be pushing against the crowd. There's going to be people, you know, standing in the sidelines who think, get back in line, you know? And God doesn't make any promises, you know? And like in this verse that I read in the beginning, and they did not love their lives so as to shy away from death.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm not going out and doing things just so that I can be martyred,
right.
You know, or, you know, I'm not trying to turn the world upside down on its head or anything like that. But, I think that, you know, being in this Christian life, it's not what it seems, or it's not always what we think it should be. Or like Jordan Peterson puts it so well, he just says the world is a very strange place, you know, and God is good, right?
That's a great dream. That's a great dream.
Yeah. It was a great dream.
You know, one of the things, I don't know if it was with you that I said it, but, you know, God is always more than. And I just caught a little bit. Bishop Barron and Jordan Peterson talked. They had a conversation, and they had Bishop Barron's outfit put out a little teaser video where they had some of Bishop Barron's hot takes and a few clips from the conversation. And, you know, Peterson begins by talking about why he doesn't want to say he believes, because if he says he believes, then there's this huge weight of accountability that is on him. And then he's going to have to, you know, in kind of his Petersonian way, he places this heavy burden on himself, and he's afraid he won't be able to hold up under the burden. Well, there's, you know, and Bishop Barron comes back and says, well, that's, you know, respect that, and that's true, and it is true. But the other side is also true, that his yoke is easy and his burden is light.
Yeah.
Because it's, and I love your dream, because it illustrates and it imagines the choice. And so the choice is continue moving with the crowd, which just as you lay out the dream, no one wants to be doing that for very real reasons, but reasons that are hard to actually express. So then get out of the crowd and go the other way. And that's crazy, but that's exactly kind of the choice. And,
yeah.
You know, even the manifestation that you had on the beach. Now I would dare bet that. So you had this experience, you didn't, you know, and conversion is like this. People, I hate the way Christians so often make such bad art, where, you know, you have this experience, then suddenly your whole life is different. I mean, you were still that kid who was resentful against your parents for sending you to Bible camp, and, you know, irritated by the other people there. And I would imagine, but over time, so this event then is in your life, and it's in your memory, and it's back there. And then things continue to start to change, and slowly, you know, you don't let anybody know that you're a Christian, but bit by bit by bit. And that is, for many, many people, the path. And they get frustrated. So, you know, I talk to people on the channel, and they're like, well, I've started doing these things, and I'm not going to abandon this road that I'm on, but I don't really believe yet or at all, and I don't know. And it's like, well, that's right. Let's keep going.
I know. I remember listening to a conversation you had with Job, and he said, he interrupted you at one point and said, how do you get there, Paul? How do you get to Lord Jesus?
Yeah.
Right. And that, I think that goes back to the knowing thing, like that I was talking about before too, is well, you can say that because you know he's the Lord, you know, and you can only know that when you enter that relationship. But like that moment on the beach and between the moment on the beach and the time that I started to read the Bible as a textbook,
yeah.
I left home. I hitchhiked from coast to coast as a 17-year-old kid. I lived homeless. I was doing drugs. Like, it was not a long time now, you know, when I look back.
When you look back on it now, but then, yeah.
But then, and then I got pregnant, and that kind of stopped me in my tracks, right? Yeah. Thank God, yeah. Because I don't know where I would have ended up, really.
Yeah.
And but you know, I say that, but at the same time, I know that God had a plan for me. You know, He told me when I was 14, He slammed me face down into the sand and said, "I love you, and I'm not going to let you go." Yeah. You know, and I wrestled with Him, really hard, really hard, and I might get a little emotional, but that's okay.
it can't be a Jordan Peterson conversation without somebody, you know, breaking up a little bit or.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Join the club, right?
That's right. That's right. I got the first installment from the talks that I did in Australia, and you know, and I did one moment I start talking about my father's ministry, and I find myself starting to break up. It's like, oh, now I'm gonna do it, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's just a really good indicator that it's real.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
When it moves you, like when I've seen Jordan Peterson choke up, it's always at those moments when he knows that he's being used by God, in my opinion. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
When he realizes that this is a bigger there's a bigger purpose. He's an instrument.
Yeah.
And I think he knows that. Yeah. That's when he gets choked up, because he is a humble man, actually. I think he really is. And you know, his desire to you know, that this thing just doesn't go sideways, that it, you know, that it stays where it should be, is a real example of his humility too. Like, he, you know, he's not out for the fame and the fortune. He's just doing something that he can't say no to it. Yep. He's driven.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah.
And so when he does get choked up, that's the litmus test,
yeah.
You know, of reality.
So you went hitchhiking, and so what were some of the other milestones in terms of changing your pregnancy? Obviously, I mean, that will sober you up, because suddenly, you know, for whatever rebellion you did against your parents, once you're faced with the fact that this other little creature that you love for some mysterious reason now is depending on you, well, that sobers a lot of people up, you know, pretty quickly.
Okay. Yeah, that's one of the reasons that I don't agree with abortion, because as difficult as it is to be 19 years old, and I didn't want to have a baby. I have great plans to continue partying and doing my thing, you know. Let alone, you know, some people want to go to college and get a career. That was the farthest thing from my mind. but children are a blessing, and they really are, you know.
Yeah.
And we don't know what that blessing is until we receive it.
Yes. Yes. So, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had my daughter, and I started to realize in, you know, reading the scriptures and moving in this relationship with Jesus and not telling anybody, like seriously not telling anybody. My sister would say, "Do you mind if I do my devotions out loud?" She was trying to convert me still. And I was like, I said, "You know what? I really mind."
Sounds like you're still close to your sister, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah, we are very close. Yeah. So I decided that I needed to know what I believe, because I had been involved in church, you know, for a short period of time, been listening to lots of sermons, and I found myself repeating things that people were telling me, but it wasn't original. It wasn't my idea. It wasn't something that I had thought through. And so I went to, I don't know if you're familiar with Cape and Ray, Major Ian Thomas. He wrote a book called The Saving Life of Christ. And he established these, it's not really a Bible school, it's more like a one-year communal living and biblical lectures. And then they have visiting teachers that come in, and they've got them all over the world.
Oh, I've never heard of it.
And Austin, no, Cape and Ray. It's called Cape and Ray Bible School. I think it's called Bible School. It started in Cape and Ray Hall in England. And then it got established, India, Canada, Switzerland, Austria, all over the world. Yeah. I'm not exactly sure when he started it, but it kind of started out like Liberty, you know, where it's this, you know, communal learning and living thing. So I did that for a year, and
with your daughter?
With my daughter, yeah. Okay. Took my daughter with me, and that's where I met my husband, actually.
Oh wow!
And then what happened at the school while I was there was the John Wimber thing happened. Okay, so.
You better explain that. Most of the people listening to this probably don't know who John Wimber is or what a very interesting...
Explain it better than me.
Well, John Wimber was, I don't know the story real well, he was a Presbyterian, basically, and he began to have these experiences and starts pursuing experiences of healing, of miraculous healing, deliverance, and he began to write books on this, and he founded a movement that grew into what would become at least part of the Vineyard Church movement, which is a charismatic evangelical, but still with some reformed theology in their DNA still. And Vineyard Church is a significant, I don't know how many of them there are, how large they are, but, and then John taught a Signs and Wonders course at Fuller Theological Seminary in California, which Lou Smeads, that was a place that some CRC notables went. Lou Smeads went there first. Eventually, Richard Mao would go there. But Lou Smeads wrote a very interesting little book, Should We Celebrate a Miracle? Because John Wimber was holding this class basically teaching seminarians how to facilitate ministry of the miraculous in their churches. And that you can find these kinds of things today, you know, notably Bethel Church in Reading, which is a couple hours north of us. They do a lot of that. But this was happening in Fuller Theological Seminary, which is one of the flagship evangelical seminaries in North America. And there was a very big debate about whether it was appropriate to do this kind of instruction and laboratory in a seminary context. And that actually gets into questions of, in the 19th century, theology, along with everything else, tried to take on sort of a science-y feel to it. So now we're going to have the science of miracles. And some people had some question whether this is, you know, it's like having the science of your spouse. And in some ways, you get to depersonalize your spouse. And if you discover that your spouse is, you know, trying to run science on you, you might say, hey, cut it out. I'm your spouse. I'm not a lab rat. And so the fear was turning God into a lab rat in that movement. So it's a John Wimber and John Wimber, you know, interestingly enough, went on to die. And, you know, so here's a guy who's doing healing and facilitating healing, and he himself, you know, he can't heal himself, and those around him aren't able to heal him. So this is, you know, this is such these are such complex conversations within the Christian realm about miracles and how to live with them and what they are and all of that. But John Wimber's right there at the center of it. So there's a little introduction to John Wimber.
Okay. Thanks for that. Thanks for that.
So yeah, how did you intersect with this whole movement? Signs and Wonders.
It came in a wave, okay? Like, yep. A huge wave. And one of the resident lecturers, kind of, he introduced it. So his name was Ken Blue, and he was a psychologist, actually, and he got right into the whole movement, the Vineyard movement. So it got introduced into the school, and I don't want to really spend too much time on it, but I went there saying, okay, Lord, I need to know what I believe. And then I got confronted with this whole idea, right? A totally new idea for me. And it didn't really mesh with the school either, I have to say. So the school itself wasn't charismatic. And so it was new to everyone. And everybody kind of got into it, you know. And I decided to kind of step back and just watch the goings on. And I mean, that's kind of how I am anyways. I didn't tell anyone I got saved, right? I didn't tell anyone I was a Christian, even in my family. So I just stepped back and I watched and I read my Bible like crazy. I just read it and read it and read it. And I felt like if there's anything to this thing, it will match up with what I'm reading, you know. And so another pivotal moment for me was I went to a healing seminar at a local town that was hosted by Ken Blue, right? One of the lecturers from the school, and we all went there, and it was in a recreation center. And so I'm watching all these people standing up, you know, and getting healed, or you know, people were prophesying that certain people were in the crowd and that they had this and that, they should come forward. And everybody was, you know, crying and moaning and carrying on. I don't mean to sound disrespectful, but really that's what it was.
Yeah. Oh, that's what happened in a number of these places.
Yeah. And the doors to the room that we were in were open. And across the hall from where we were was a square dance club of senior citizens. And they had just finished their lessons and they were coming out. And they were all dressed in their square dance clothes, right? And they were laughing and talking and it was just loud. And this thought came to my mind, if somebody gets up and closes the door, I'm out of here. I'm done with this. Hmm. Because to me, what I saw was basically the world going to hell in a handbasket and all these Christians worrying about all their little problems, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I had a world of problems. I had a little girl. I didn't have a job. I was already in debt, you know. But I just knew that God was bigger than my problems. And I also understood the idea of suffering, you know. I think that suffering is painful, right? But pain is an indicator of something. And without pain, we'd be dead. We'd be dead sooner than later.
Right.
And I'm a firm believer in the idea that we are purified through suffering. It makes us better people, you know, in general. And so Paul says, rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. And there's no clause except for when, you know, your leg hurts or something.
Yeah,
you know, it's always. And I've taken opportunities when I've been in serious pain. And rejoiced, and it's made a world of difference because it reminds me of who's in control of my life, right? And that idea that I've got you, you know, I love you. And I was listening to your conversation with Andrew this morning, and he mentioned in there how he appreciated the fact that Jordan Peterson says, I don't know, there's, you know, things that I don't know. And you say the same thing. And I commend you for that, because a lot of Christians think that they have to have all the answers, you know. And I think that all we really need to know, and I've heard you say this actually, is that God is good.
Yeah.
He's good.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, that's all we need to know. And I mean, I have faced death. And wasn't sure if I was going to talk about this, and it'll probably get me all teary, but I had, in 2007, I had a brain injury. I had a car accident and I suffered a brain injury. And I lost my ability to think. I lost my ability to do a lot of things. I couldn't remember anything. I became very anxious because of the loss of those, you know, what do you call those, abilities. And a year, you know, I suffered with it for a year before I was diagnosed. And so I didn't really know what was happening to me. And a year into it, I tried to commit suicide. So, and I was almost successful. And that was another pivotal moment in my life. So I took a large handful of pills, and I crawled into bed, and I started to say Psalm 23 out loud. And God crawled into bed with me, and he said, this is not what I had planned for you. But he said, but I know how hard it is. I know it's hard, and I'm here. And I survived, and thank God I did, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I made it through that. Mm-hmm. And my life has never been better, actually. Mm. It's never been better.
Mm.
But that moment was when I realized that he does know our suffering. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it hurts him, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
It hurts him.
Mm-hmm.
And he is there. But he isn't going to wipe it away. And it will make us a better person.
Yeah.
And it has done for me. And when I started watching Jordan Peterson, I could relate to him because I know he's also suffered with depression and anxiety. And, you know, obviously he's had autoimmune problems and didn't feel like he could get up and get his job done. But, you know, he did it. He did it. He pushed through it. And it was in that suffering that he learned those things that he learned.
Mm-hmm.
It was in that suffering that he went on that quest to find out how to alleviate that suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's what suffering to me is. It's horrible. And I don't recommend it. You know, it's not like I think people should go out and try to find ways to suffer. I mean, life will deliver that without asking for it,
right,
you know?
Right, right.
But rejoice in the Lord always. Yeah. Because it will take you to places that you never thought that you would go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yep. Yep.
And that is what our lives, that is what our lives are like. I was listening to Verveke did another one, released another one last week, and he was talking about, you know, the I forget how exactly how he phrased it, the being, basically the being versus having. And yeah, the, you know, we try to have, and I'm working on some other videos in my head, found another interesting commentator who's got some interesting comments on Jordan Peters stuff that I'm going to weave into some of my videos. But we are in the midst of a, we are in the midst of a culture that imagines that, it imagines on one hand that we know what we want and what we need in order to arrive at heaven, let's use that word, and that arriving there is a, we get there by controlling and having and then delivering and securing all of these things. And that is such, to me, a laughable, ridiculous quest if anybody has lived any number of decades, because life is not like that. If you would have asked your teenage self what the good life was, you know, now you look back on it and you think, I didn't know anything, you know, if, and Lord save me from my teenage self. If that's the self I'd have to be locked into for the rest of my life. Yeah. And so he pushes you into the sand and it's like, well, yeah, what kind of, you know, what kind of God would push a girl into the sand at Bible camp? Well, one who loves her. And yet you get pregnant and have to work things out, and there's an accident and a suicide attempt. And well, what kind of a God would allow your story to unfold like that? Well, it's a God who knows how to write amazing stories and, you know, conquered by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives so as to shy away from death. Yeah. There it is, baby. And we read it and we think, no, but I wanted that something that was safe and secure, but Dostoevsky has it right. People get into that place and they torpedo it. Because no, it's meaning that we, So we have a couple more minutes. Any last things you want to? Yeah, the time goes fast.
I have a couple poems in light of what we talked about. I write poetry, and I also sing. Esther O'Reilly had a comment about my musical voice, and I laughed because I thought I am a singer too. So that she was pretty perceptive.
Well, you've got 5 minutes. Use it as you will.
Okay, so I'm just going to read. I'll read this one for sure. I wrote this many years ago, but it's about the fact that God has us. Okay, so I hope it's understandable. There is such a fine line that I walk upon. As I look down on it, it is there and gone. Then how I weary of the light that shines, making it thick once, making it fine. As the one foot falls right after the other, the line swerves around and draws itself under. As I try so hard to stay out of its wake, I'm still held by the path that it makes. So I pray God's face really shines on mine, ever changing the perspective of my fine line.
It's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And then maybe I'll just close with this one here. Because I like to think about God a lot. And the more you think about God, the more you feel your own limitations, because he's so infinite, right? And so that's kind of what this is about. The little hands ticking, not subdued by my time. The little bird sits in the cedar's design. The wind ruffles feathers as the little bird climbs, and I'm having no trouble with finding the rhyme. How I envy the cedar's wisdom sublime. If the little bird's folly and nonsense were mine, The Creator's intentions is ancient design for a world with no sorrow, no tears, and no dying. Yes, the stature of cedars lead my eyes to the heights. My deep calls to the deep with infinite sighs. My thoughts travel circles in a cloudless sky, and I endlessly curse my finite mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just leave it at that, Paul.
Well, wonderful. Well, thank you. And I will send this to you. And you know, if you decide you'd like to post it, and everybody, I always say that, and the ones that we post, obvious people are like, yes, post it. Yes, post it. Well, if you saw it, we already posted it.
Yeah.
Good to talk to you again, Sherry.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you very much for your time, Paul.
All right. Take care.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.